So, Stephen, I think it's great to talk to you, and I think a place that I always like to start is, and especially for people who are thinking at the intersections of faith and film and stuff like that, is just maybe tell us briefly about your journey and how you kind of got to this point of making films and what led you to that, and then maybe how we got to, or how you got to create Henry Gamble's birthday party and some of the kind of backstory behind that too.
Yeah. I'll try to make the long story short because it's a long, windy road. I grew up in the Carolinas. I'm a cinephile from small, like early childhood. I was obsessed with film scores, even as early as like 7, 8, 9 years, and had a whole teenage life of coming to different categories of film, and I went through the like AFI Oscar phase, I went through the art phase, I went through the American independent film phase, and the action movie phase. So I always loved movies, but didn't know how to learn. And then back in the 90s, when that was, you know, there weren't a lot of filmmaking as a sort of self-empowerment tool, or it didn't seem possible. So I took a technical course. I didn't know how. It wasn't really offered at my high school, so I was drawn to performance. So I ended up doing, I was an actor in high school and college, and I was a theater major. I was a film studies minor, but that wasn't, I don't even know if I completed the minor. But I was like a, I was an actor. I was, but knowing that somehow I would eventually end up making movies. And so I came out of University of South Carolina and spent a year in New York, and I didn't love it there. Eventually started writing plays. The first play I wrote, one act play, was produced in Chicago. I came to see it and felt more at home here. My stress level went down. It felt like a cultural center that was more conducive to the sort of atmosphere that I grew up in. It was a little more relaxed than Manhattan. And so came here, dabbled in theater for a couple of years. And then in 2005, I had a really crappy day job, and I called my dad during one lunch, I think it was either March or May. And I said, I think I'm going to start making movies this summer, and I don't know how I'm going to do it or what I'm going to do, but I'm going to start. And then, so the last 12 years has basically been my self-education. I've just made more or less one movie per year of various shapes and sizes and budgets. And so that's been my life. You know, I have a weird story in that, like, you know, it's taken me the almost a whole decade to achieve any kind of like first time filmmaker buzz, and that's like 7 features later. It's been a really strange journey. So basically, the first 5 years was just me making a bunch of really over ambitious stuff that didn't really come off. They didn't play anywhere. And then 2010, I was like, you know, get off your high horse. You're like artsy, overambitious high horse, and make something small and personal. And so it took me 5 years of making stuff and that weren't very successful on the festival circuit to be like, what if I just tackled something that was true to me and semi-autobiographical? So that's when I made The Wise Kids. And that's when I started gaining legitimacy as a filmmaker. So it wasn't until I just like took a deep breath and said, save your big, ambitious mixed tone ideas for later when you know what you're doing, and just make something straightforward and simple. I mean, it didn't end up being super straightforward because it's an ensemble piece, and is it about 3 people? Is it about 5 people? You know, like it's not, there's sure. Like, there's still not one protagonist in that film, which has ended up being kind of my thing. And then the latter 5 years of that 10-year journey has been a little bit easier, and the movies have actually gotten seen. So with Henry Gamble, I didn't really expect to come back to this world of evangelical America so soon. I've written another script that will probably, the idea is going to sound so much better and more fascinating specifically to you guys than it would ever have been on film. But this script that I wrote called Porn Ministry, about two evangelical ministers who, one of them I think they were in Charlotte, and one of them catches porn on their 15-year-old son's computer, and then rather than like lambast him or whatever, they experience a really emotional pull towards the West Coast to go share the gospel with the adult entertainment industry. It wasn't that good. I mean, it sounds great, but it wasn't.
There's something there, man. There's something there.
I would be very surprised if it's not already being done in real life.
Clearly. Well, I mean, I looked up organizations that are like...
There's a porn church out here. Right. Yeah.
But that movie culminated in a pool party back at home, and so the whole crux of that movie was we spend 90 minutes or so out with this adult entertainment industry, and then the teenage son has a birthday party in the final 10 pages. So this movie about porn culminated with this smaller sequence with all these Christians gathering to like take off their clothes, which is the paradox at the heart of Henry Gamble and of any pool party. Christian pool party. So I was thinking about, I was excited by that sequence, and ultimately that's what became Henry Gamble's birthday party. But then inevitably I was like, we've already tackled these things a little bit. So I was like, why do this? But then, you know, I was thinking, and then I started to think of it as almost like an emotional prequel to the Wise Kids, because I was like, you know, the Wise Kids, these kids are moving on, they're coming into adulthood, they're achieving a certain wisdom or whatever. But I was, you know, but the Wise Kids didn't directly confront sexuality and those like early mysterious inklings of desire. So that's ultimately what gave me the justification to kind of do a kind of flip side to the coin. So ultimately, I almost see these movies as siblings. One just happens to sort of emotionally and psychologically take place before the first one, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. I think an interesting place to start, because you bring up the pool party, and I hadn't really thought about that setting as kind of as a character or carrying as much weight as it does until you kind of brought this point up. Because, you know, growing up in the South, and growing up evangelical Southern Baptist, that's something that we always did every summer. And we had a pool, and we would have people over, and we would have pool parties with the youth group and stuff. And it's such a sexually charged thing. And it opens up this avenue, your film opens up this avenue to think what it must have been like to be parents and to be adults in that community attending that thing. And you have all these different storylines. So part of what I appreciated, and Richard, I know you want to weigh on this too, about Henry Gamble's birthday party is kind of the authenticity of it. And I think that the people that I've talked to that have seen it is what resonates with them the most, is that you're not attempting to kind of parody this community or anything. There's a great deal of respect that you approach, and I think that adds to the weight of the film and makes it stand out in ways that... You know, I work in promoting faith films sometimes, and they're just not even close, not even in the ballpark.
Right.
So, yeah. I didn't know, Richard, if you had a comment on that.
Yeah.
Well, what I thought was about both this film and about The Wise Kids is I see these films, and I just wrote a review about The Wise Kids on our website.
I know, I read it. Thank you. I liked it a lot. I really appreciated it.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Is that I see both of them as being really apocalyptic. And in that sense of like, in that sense of revealing something, you know, in that sense of something being revealed, and then the revelation that takes place, you know, with each of these characters in turn, something gets either revealed to them or revealed to us about them, and then it's never the same. You know, it's like the veil of reality is kind of ripped, and then suddenly they have to go on with that information. And it's almost kind of like, you know, I read one interview where you talked about it being like, you liked film as like an organism. And it seems like that you know, the weight of the gravity of the film just kind of rests on each of these characters in turn. And in the process, then we reveal things about those characters. So I'm just wondering about what your thought process is on that and why you like doing that kind of filmmaking.
I mean, the reason I make them is because I grew up with these people, and I love these people dearly. And if anything, I've come to love, even though I'm not technically a part of that community anymore, I've come to appreciate that community more. And I'm very moved by this community of believers. And I don't see them represented properly in culture. So that's where it starts.
Even from their own filmmaking, even from their own community, they can't get themselves right.
Yeah, I mean, you have to understand art and storytelling. And even movies that are supposed to be sympathetic, like Saved, I look at it and I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I guess relatively speaking, it's sympathetic, but you know.
It kind of turned into a Mean Girls prom movie by the end. You know, it was like.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, so the standard has not been set really for compassionate three-dimensional portraits of Christians in film, which is odd because there's so many of them.
That was one of the things I thought too, is that, you know, how rare is it, how often, you know, I've seen, like, in both of your films, I noticed is that people pray in your films. And even after, you know, there's the opening scene in Henry Gamble, which is very, you know, I don't want to put any spoilers in there, but let's just say there's two teenage boys, they're at a sleepover, they have a kind of, you know, there's a little discussion about sex that goes on, and then the teenage boys do whatever it is that teenage boys do when they start talking about sex. But then right after that moment, like, Henry, like, says his prayers and goes to sleep. And I think that's, like, so characteristic of his culture. And, you know, and you never see that in Hollywood. I mean, you never see somebody just say a prayer as part of their everyday life. And yet that's part of mainstream culture in America. That's what most Americans do.
Yeah. I mean, that sort of embodies the whole movie in a way, I guess. You know, except he's in, you know, it's in that opening scene, it's midnight and it's safe. You know, I've compared the bedroom in that movie to the pool, the underneath the pool, you know, these sort of safe places where what may be judged or forbidden or called out or criticized out in public is actually, there are these little safe spaces in adolescence where you can work your stuff out, that you have limited time there and they're small spaces. And you're most exposed to the larger spaces, which are a little more tinged with judgment, and you're worried about what people are thinking or of you and stuff like that. But just to go back to your apocalyptic thing, I'm just trying to make loving, interesting, complex portraits of people that I hold dear. But in terms of it being apocalyptic, you know, I've gotten multiple people at various Q&A sessions for this film that have said the movie feels kind of like a thriller. These things aren't things that I plan, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is just like, that's like the id. That's like whatever internal stuff just like coming out in the making of it. But it's not, I'm not thinking about these things when I'm putting it together. If anything, I'm just thinking about energy, momentum, why do we care, how do we keep it going, that sort of thing.
Have there been any audiences that have watched the film? Well, I mean, I guess in terms of like, have there been audiences that the film has resonated with that you were surprised that the film resonated with?
No, I wish. I mean, the maddening thing over the last few years about making Wisekids and Henry Gamble is that, you know, there are beautiful organizations like Level Ground who do embrace it and look out for these sorts of movies. But, you know, there's really no forum for me to show this to a large group of conservative to moderate Christians. There's no organization made up of those people that is going to invite this movie there.
Yeah.
And it's for this, and it's the same reason that, and I'm not saying that this is going to sound potentially bad, but for the same reason that we had to shoot the Wisekids in a Methodist church instead of a a Baptist church.
I wondered where you shot that.
My dad's Baptist church was right down the street, but that was just not a line I wanted to deal with. And, you know, Methodists famously are more open to LGBT people than other denominations. So I don't know. I think the people who might really secretly, profoundly respond to this in the Christian world are going to see it in May onward, when they're alone at night and it's safe.
Yeah. They're going to be in Henry's bedroom, so to speak.
But I really do. I mean, I think the way that, and I've been trying to think about some more conservative folks that I could share this with, but I do think there's a possibility that those communities respond positively to it, because one of the things that I liked about the film is that although you are very respectful of these people and those communities, you're not shying away from the deep trauma that they frequently inflict on people, and that people we know bear the weight of that hyper-conservative approach to sexuality and social issues. And there are two or three characters, not just the issue of sexuality, but but propriety and how we should behave and how we act. When you start to place all these restrictions on people's behavior with these kind of heightened theological threats, so to speak, that I don't know. I think there's a broader sex abuse going on in Christian community than just the Catholic Church, mm-hmm. and it's not always physical. Mm-hmm. And I think people are wise to that. The older they get, they start asking questions, and their churches aren't a safe place to air those. But maybe watching films like this are ways in which they can engage that those more traumatic components of their, you know, past or present.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this conversation is interesting because there are people who think, not everybody, but there are people, big fans of the Wise Kids, who think they think I took a step backwards a little bit in this film and was actually more judgmental and a little less three-dimensional than I was in The Wise Kids. I would attribute that to just a slight tonal shift, not a shift in perspective, because the movies are doing two different things. But I guess what I'm saying is that The Wise Kids had a pretty tough time reaching conservative audiences, and so between the two films, I would think that that would be the easier one. So I don't know, maybe I'm too skeptical about how Henry Gamble, what it would do. There's a lot of people out there who preferred Henry Gamble, you know, for whatever reason. But there's some people who are like, I like Henry Gamble, but can we talk about The Wise Kids? I loved it. I have to remind people like that the sort of more caustic or a couple of the more sort of like broadly painted characters in Henry Gamble are few and far between. There's like maybe two or three of them that border on that. And I have to remind people that the entire Gamble family are Christians too, and begin and end the film as born again believers. And we're never, so I just think, you know, it's easy to say, oh, he's hitting people a little bit harder this time. But percentage wise, we're talking about like three or four characters out of 20. So, you know, I don't know. I realize I'm answering an accusation that I haven't been thrown that hasn't been thrown at me, but I just wanted to bring that up because I do feel slightly defensive of this film in terms of its tonal place in my work and also in how it addresses these issues.
One of the things that these films reminded me of, and this is not a critique at all, or not a negative critique at all, is that these films reminded me a little bit of like Edward Albee or Mark Crowley or somebody like that, like Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf or Boys in the Band. But the screaming is going on the inside rather than, you know, towards the other characters. But in the sense that those films are also revelatory. Those films are also about revealing the truth about people and focusing on each cast of characters and revealing the truth. And I think that to see that in a Christian setting is actually pretty refreshing to me, you know, not having to watch alcoholic, Elizabeth Taylor scream out her problems, you know, and having her to have get blinding drunk before she can say what's really on her mind. But actually see people that I identify with, you know, struggling with these problems and struggling with their relationships and that kind of thing.
You know, the irony is that I also wouldn't say that the people I grew up with were inauthentic. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Like, on one hand, you're like, why isn't anyone talking about their feelings or like what's actually going on here? On the other hand, they don't seem phony. So you can actually have these beautiful, authentic personalities and still be like super repressed emotionally, but you don't realize that you're standing in a pool, so to speak, of emotional repression until later when you look back and you're like, oh, we were in a pool.
I think both Ryan and I can look back on that and see the pool. I think probably based on our backgrounds, we can definitely tell. We know people like this. We come from people like this. I mean, this is definitely something we're familiar with.
Yeah. My dad's been digitizing all our old home movies, so I actually went home over Christmas and saw a couple of videos of me at Henry Gamble's age and some of the people that had inspired the film, and we're having a great time. I mean, it's not like this like stiff, unpleasant atmosphere. So yeah. I think that's a lot of where, whatever y'all appreciate about the film, that's where that comes from, is that I'm not like above, I don't feel above them. I feel like I really miss the like cookouts and stuff that I had with them.
There's more than a nostalgia at work, because I mean, I watched this, and the further I'm removed over time from those communities, the more fondly I look back on them and realize that I'm really not in all the thoughts, all the theological or cultural or political or what have you kind of changes that I've made in my own life. I don't start that journey without that setting. Like, I don't know where my life is if I don't grow up in that place, because it's certainly not where I am now. And there's a certain value to that I want to honor in the way that I interact with people who maybe think like I do or differently than I do.
Yeah.
And I think your film echoes that.
Yeah. It's not unlike other people who come from slightly rigid, traditional, ceremonial, but beautiful, age-old communities, you know? It endows you with something. And also you realize that this community, while at the same time filled with a certain amount of repression, is also giving these people life. It's actually getting them through the day. It's filling them as people. It's not like they were just spreading this disease. They were actually sharing in something very beautiful that is good for them.
Yeah.
Just a background question. Your dad was a preacher?
Is.
And what denomination or faith background?
Southern Baptist.
Okay. And how
what's been their takeaway from the film? How do they respond?
Yeah.
I always wish there was more of an interesting answer to this question than there is. I mean, I have relatively moderate, supportive parents. There's become this tradition between Wise Kids and Henry Lamble, where I'm visiting home and I bring a rough cut with me, and we all go out in downtown Charleston and have dinner and get drunk, and then we go home and I'm like, okay, here it is, and then I go into the dining room while they watch, and I just am constantly refilling the glass.
The best screening possible.
Yeah. But the thing is, I'm not able to adequately gauge how everyone feels because we've all been drinking. So usually there's this, like, everyone's tired. It's like 11 or 11:30 at this point, and they're all just kind of staring at the credits or the screen or whatever, and they're just like, it was really nice, it was beautiful, or just things like, you know, it's not... I've never sat down and had a conversation with them about exactly their critique of the film or how they feel. What I do know is that they are supportive every step of the way. And I think even then, when they feel a little strange about... Because, I mean, let's face it, they're... In some sense, their way of life is being critiqued by their son in front of thousands and thousands and thousands of people. So I do think there's a certain amount of, like, there's a period at the beginning where they have to just adjust and adapt and think about it. And then a year or two, three later, I think they start to see, whereas early in the process, they may be like, oh, this is weird, I hope he doesn't think this about us or whatever. I think they come around to, like, what I'm trying to do and the goodwill and the understanding. And I think they hear from their congregants and from people in the community who see Wise Kids on Netflix and have positive things to say about it. I forward them emails I get from, like, French kids and kids in Arkansas and stuff. So they eventually are able to see what the films do for people. I got 2 emails from French people this week.
Wow.
About Wise Kids.
That's awesome.
In terms of you're talking about the screening with drunk Southern Baptists, is that where the box of wine came from in the film?
Yeah, but it's changed. I mean, well, I guess it hasn't changed entirely. I grew up, there was no, in the Florence days, which is up to when I was 18, no alcohol ever in any way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
And then college, coming home, you know, mom and dad got a little looser about it, and now it's a thing. There was still, like, if mom and dad are hosting a thing and Christina and I are home, Christina's my sister, there's still a little bit of, like, are we allowed to drink tonight? And then we may or may not just do it, or we may just sneak up to her room and do it and take a bunch of selfies. not so much anymore, but that's definitely like, that was an intense thing in high school. It was unimaginable that there would be anything except for horrible sugar filled sodas at these places.
So there's a background, similar background about no alcohol. And so what I thought was really sweet about the movie is when the two gentlemen start drinking out of the box of wine. And it's very clear that the kind of the elder member at the party is getting a little tight. Like but his line in the movie to me is the most heartbreaking, truthful moment when he's just kind of standing in disbelief at all that's going around. And, you know, and he's like, we're all broken or whatever that line is. And it feels like this, it gives him permission or the ability or the courage. And he's expressing this truth about this community that they're never going to say on a Sunday, you know,
right?
From church. So I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, I think what does he say? He says, "Oh, we're doing it all wrong, people.
We're doing it all wrong." That's it. Yeah.
I think you know that's an interesting point. I think there's a lot of sort of like maybe like old school Calvinist Christians who would be like, "Okay, great. I hear yes, of course." The like Chicago filmmaker is espousing compassion. Actually, this is legitimate. And you know, there are harsher old school Christians who are like, yes, there's love, yes, there's compassion, but there's so much more, you know?
Yeah.
I wanted to ask a quick process question. The film is so intricate. It's like, you know, tons of different puzzle pieces fit together. And one of the things I love about it is that, you know, whatever's going on screen in the foreground, whoever's having the conversation, that's not necessarily all that's happening at one time in the film. And I love the scene where there's like the adults are talking and Henry comes up and gets a bowl of chips. And it's pretty clear that he has a crush on his best friend, Gabe. And then there's this other girl there that Gabe has been lusting after who seems to like Henry. And she's gorgeous. And she has a bikini on with a cross on it. It has like she's got like this little metal cross, which I guess is to protect her virtue or something.
I don't know. You know what? It was supposed to be a Jesus fish sewn onto the thing.
Uh-huh.
But then that got neglected, which I forgot about it. So we were like, that was our quick fix, was just to hang up.
So he goes and gets this bowl of chips, and then the adults keep talking. And then you see in the background, Henry comes around, you know, down by the pool. And the first person he goes to with the bowl of chips is Gabe. You know, and he hands his friend. That's the one who he's really concerned about first, and then and only then does he go to the other people and, you know, give them chips and things like that. But I'm just wondering about my guess is you didn't have a lot of time to rehearse this. So how did you put all those puzzle pieces together?
Well, probably some of it's accidental. I mean, some of it's the actors. Mm-hmm. Just because a thing is happening doesn't mean I've made everyone do it.
Okay.
So a lot of times it's trusting the actors. I don't know. I mean, when you've got actors that good, you can just sort of like just kind of design the thing real quick something may not have happened in first take, but I just like right before action may call out something else or ask for something else. So it's just a constant sort of mindfulness about the possibilities within the frame. And to that, I mean, you know, we couldn't afford to have this. Probably there's, because of sound design and stuff, there's probably a lot of scenes in the film where you as audience members think that there are a lot of other people there, but they're actually not. So we couldn't afford to have all those actors there all the time. And so the shots that you're talking about are the rare instances where we were able to have background. I think we were all committed to making that work. So,
yeah.
And obviously some of the intricacies are in the script too, but, a lot of that is just actors on top of their game. It's scheduled well, so you have time to figure things out over the course of a few takes. And it's just, being open to what's happening.
You have some incredibly talented actors. I mean, I saw...
Holy smokes.
Looking at some of the stuff that Tyler Ross has been doing, like, he's been on The Killing, Had a major role in that, and you're saying your prayers or something, because you've gotten a really good cast for this one and The Wise Kids.
Well, thank you. I'm very proud of them, and I love actors, and I love looking for the right one. We have amazing casting directors here in Chicago that for Wise Kids traveled down to Charleston with me and did some local casting, and just powerhouse. It's the same casting directors that, like, they do Shameless and Sirens and Chicago-based stuff. They're really, really the best.
One of the things that when I talk to directors and actors, and certainly when I talk to people who love movies, I think hopefully as much as we do, is I think really good movies have the ability to shape the way we view the world. To maybe really good movies, you go in thinking one thing and you come out, and maybe at least you're thinking about it in a different way, that it's maybe you're more empathetic. Maybe you understand something better. Maybe you question something that you always held dear. And I think viewers experience that a lot and celebrate that with great films. I wonder for you, I wonder if going through this process, especially with Henry Gamble's Birthday Party, in what ways did you emerge? Did you maybe view the world differently? Did you look at life slightly different? Or just maybe how did it help you grow as a filmmaker? As you look towards future projects, you know, I might do this differently, or I learned this, I want to incorporate this moving forward.
You know, I did an audio commentary for the DVD, and they just sent me an early copy of the DVD, and I feel bad. I watched my own commentary just because why not? I'm not going to keep watching it over and over. Just want to get that make clear. You know, towards the end, I said some things that I'd forgotten that I'd said, and I kind of surprised myself. In this commentary, I say that I used to be sort of staunchly, I went through sort of staunchly atheistic phase or whatever, and I think that combination of making movies about these communities, and also, you know, one of my heroes is Marilyn Robinson, reading her work and going through these movies have made me understand religion better and understand these communities of faith better. And I spend so much of my time on these films focusing on one hand on humanizing these people. So a strictly sort of secular humanist point of view of these people. But on the other hand, kind of critiquing too the world. And so what's happened is after I've made these movies, because of interviews like this and because of Q&A sessions and stuff, I've also had to go back and it's been harder for me in the past to peg down exactly what I love about the community and what I love about making stories about these people, as opposed to the nuanced little tricky moral conundrums that might lie there. And so I have to say that being asked to focus on the positive and what I've taken from growing up in this world has made me understand religion better and understand the community better. And it's made me in a weird way more interested in Christianity. So what I'm excited to do moving forward, because I don't think it'll be a long time probably before I tackle evangelical America directly like this. But I'm excited to integrate these multidimensional Christian characters into whatever tapestries I continue to weave. And I guess I've opened my own eyes to a complexity there that maybe even I, as I was making these, was ignoring.
That's great.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah.
Well, I can tell you, I can't wait to see what you do next. So,
I'm figuring that out now.
Yeah,
yeah. All the best on that too. That's a great answer. Not that there's like a bad answer. That's really interesting. Hey, thanks for taking the time.
Absolutely. Thanks for.
You're such a good filmmaker, a great storyteller, and like Richard said, it's. You're somebody that I definitely want to watch and follow because these two films are really, I think, really special and probably mean a lot to a lot of people just because of the honesty and the openness that you have there. So all the best with this as it nears its release with Henry Gamble. We'll do our best to promote it.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah, I'm excited for the 2 a.m. teenagers to catch it unexpectedly. Because that's where the audience, you know?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
You got it.
Thank you so much, Steven.
Thanks, y'all. Bye.